This is Roberto Gonzalez. You are back here with the Steambox crew. And today we have two very special guests. I'm going to introduce them in just a moment. But for now, I got my Steambox homies. Can my Steambox homies say what's up?
What's up?
Yeah. First, and super special to me is somebody who finished this school last year. I got Shara Braxton in the house. Do you want me to use your code name, like your G.I. Joe name, your stage name?
Yeah, I would have preferred you just said my G.I. Joe name.
What's your G.I. Joe name?
Manami.
So I got Manami in the house, and you're probably going to tell me how you got that name in just a little bit.
Yeah.
And I also have a gem from AS220. I got Medusa in the house as well, and she is a local hip-hop legend. Medusa, can you say hello?
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having me today. Really excited to be here.
We're excited to have you. A whole bunch of our students have questions. They have worked on questions. Matthew in particular, this has been his baby. Matthew, you want to open it up and hit us up with a question? on your time, Matthew.
All right, anyone of you can go first, but what's your top five hip-hop artists?
The top five question.
I don't like answering that question.
I heard a good argument to not answer that question before, but I'm still curious. You don't have to. I'm not going to make you.
Yeah, I don't like answering that question.
Tell me why you don't like answering the question.
Because I feel as if every artist is individual. So when you try to, like, categorize, like, I understand, like, there's genres,
mm-hmm.
but everybody is good at what they do.
Okay.
You see Eminem as a hip-hop artist, but nobody can do what Eminem does quite as good as Eminem does it. You
right.
feel me? Hove is Hove, my G. You can't, nobody else could be Hove, you feel me?
Yeah.
Like, everybody is their own individual artist. So when they're in, like, one category, I understand what you mean, but everybody's their own individual artist, and they're, like, good at what they do. So I don't really like saying, like, one is better than the other.
I feel you. I feel I've heard this argument before, and I think that's fair. So I'm a leave you alone on that. I'm wondering if you want to touch it.
Yeah, I feel very similar to Manami. I can tell you the top five who influenced me.
All right.
That's kind of how I would, like, remix the question a little bit. Jay-Z, God MC, Hove is, like, definitely in that five. And this is in no particular order, necessarily. It's, like, the five who I love the most. Jay-Z, Kanye West, definitely Lauryn Hill. Lauryn Hill for sure. Like, let me see. And I mean, I'm gonna go with Kendrick and Cole right now, you know, just
yeah.
a shout out
oh,
to
yeah.
like New School.
It's a contemporary.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's funny because everybody wants to shit on, like, new music because
right.
like they want to go to the classics. But if we go into classics, we got like 20, 30, even 40 years now, you know what I mean, to go way back.
Yeah.
But right now, and it's not fair to compare 40 years to what's in the bubble right now. But also, it's not fair to say that what's in the bubble right now is crap when there's obviously some gems in there.
Right. I mean, I think, like, if we, like, we got to think back to, like, when we were younger. Even I'm thinking about when my mom was younger, when hip-hop was first coming out. It was getting shit on, to be completely honest,
yep.
by its parents, right? Like, people who were,
because
like,
their generation.
Because their generation, you know? And then you look at, like, things like jazz. Like, that was getting shit on at a certain point. So if we, you know, if we don't bridge the generational gaps, like, we're just going to do what our parents did to us. And that's not fair.
Yeah. You mentioned, one of the people you mentioned was Lauryn Hill.
Mm.
And Lauryn Hill burns my heart in good, sad ways, all kinds of ways. Because on one hand, I want to respect her desire to evolve as an artist. But on the other hand, like, it was that one album, besides the Fugees work, it was that one album that I fell in love with.
Mm-hmm.
And when she evolved from that album, like, what did she really leave for me?
Yeah.
So it's weird, right? Because, like, I respect her, and at the same time, what do you think?
So I'll summarize it like this. I went to her concert. Her and Nas were here a few years ago in Providence.
Yep.
I went to the Nas and Lauryn Hill concert, and I was amped, like, yeah, I'm about to hear all my jams. She didn't perform any of them. She didn't perform nothing from Miss Education or from the Fugees, and I was pissed. I'm like, yo, give me back my money. Oh, I didn't pay for the ticket, but still, give me back my money. But I think a lot of that, from what I gather, I don't think she has the rights to her music. Like, I believe that, like, something with Wyclef, I don't really know the whole history behind
yeah.
that, but I believe she doesn't have the rights to her original music. That's not to, like, you know, say that she couldn't have kept making something that was like comparable or better than Miss Education, but I know just as far as like from when I tried to see her a few years ago, I was pissed off that none of her stuff even to me sounded like it could compare what was on Miss Education.
Okay. Yeah. Refugees. Did Nas do the same thing?
No.
So I went and saw Nas and Lil' Kim mm-hmm. like a month ago in St. Louis. We were pissed. It was like $60 mm-hmm. for the concert, wow. and I feel like we got like a $30 show. Because he came out, they were like 2 hours late.
Yeah.
He came out, did like a few of his olds, and that was it.
He did his thing, but as they were transitioning from his set to her set, he did If I Ruled the World with her on the hook. She mm-hmm. didn't even come out and sing the hook.
Oh, well, that's the opportunity, right?
I know. Highly upset.
Yeah.
Ouch.
I'd have been singing it for her.
I was really mad.
Most Def did that to me one time.
Okay. Yeah.
I went to see Black Star, so it was Talib Kweli and Most Def, and Talib went off, and Most Def came out and played a drum. And I was like, yo, all right, cool. He's going to rap eventually? And nah, he just played the drum.
See, no.
That's disrespectful.
You go to see, like, a movie in the IMAX, and you see a movie you didn't want to see. That's, like, basically what that's like. No.
Well, I want to know, considering that Lauryn Hill is often, you know, vilified for having this show scheduled and then not coming out on time or not performing what she is expected to perform, but that being due to, like, the latitude as an artist, like, to be in that element. Like, if she's not feeling like she's in that element and ready to come out, she was an hour and 45 minutes late to a concert I went to for her, and I stood there and I was like, okay, I'm waiting for you, Lauryn. So, if you want to restate it, I can.
Restate, yeah.
So, what's the latitude for artistry versus, like, them having to perform for a check? It's like, because we're consuming their music as, like, this is their art, and if they don't feel as though they're in their mode of artistry, how can we be like, well, gotta do it anyway. I paid to see you do the thing.
Well, I guess the line is drawn, like, some people decide they want to be entertainers. And it's different. If you want to be an entertainer, then that's what you do. Now your label is entertainer. Like, this is what you do. You go to city, state to state. You travel, you perform. That's what you want to do. When it comes to the point where they're tired of being commercialized, it's like, you can't, as a person, as a fan, you can't personally be, like, you can feel some type of way about it, but you can't be mad at them for feeling the way they feel. You can't be mad at someone's feelings, you feel me? So, it's like, at the end of the day, I don't know, but I assumed that for the Lauryn Hill case, that she was tired of doing that. She didn't want to do it. She made her music, she did what she had to do, she made her money, she had her kid, and she wanted to be a mother and have a normal life.
I feel you.
That's what I feel as if she did.
Yeah,
and it gets to a point where you don't, like, to me personally, I love music, don't get me wrong, I'm gonna write music to the day I die, but I want to do music, I want to do a couple music videos, do a tour or two, stand in the back and start writing music for people and never do music again, because I don't care about fame. I did this because I love the music, and now that I got the money and the money that I need to support me, my family, and the people that I care about, what my job is done, but I'm gonna still do what I love. Just not to the quantity you guys want it done.
I feel you. And I want you to evolve. You my baby. We've been through so much fun,
so much
great stuff, dark stuff. We've been through
stuff.
All kinds of stuff. I want you to evolve, and I want you to have your truth. So there's definitely that with Lauryn Hill. And I feel like a lot of people feel, I bet you guys feel this way too,
like,
that we grew up together, right? Like, we were almost a part of it. Like, We were in the Weird Adventures Pokemon.
Yeah. That's a weird Pokemon, but okay. Because you say evolution.
Oh my
yes.
God. Yes.
No.
No. Yo, but all right. No. Hang on. So we Steambox, right? We do a whole bunch of nerdy ass programs at Steambox. And that's one way to look at it, right? Like, there's Pokemon that my son doesn't like after they evolve. Like, they get weird for him or whatever. And that's what we're talking about. Lauryn Hill evolved, and then she wasn't like the cute Pikachu anymore. You know what I mean? She was what's Raichu?
Oh my gosh.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, she evolved.
But the
evolved,
same thing happened with Fantasia. Fantasia did the same thing.
Yeah.
Fantasia did the same exact thing. She did a couple songs. She was like, hey, this is what I did. I made some music, did a tour or two, got the feedback she wanted, got the feedback she didn't want, went through what she went through, had a kid, became a mother, and stopped doing music.
The world is different.
Now she does it, and she does it, like, here and there. Now she does it to get paid for a feature or two. Like, it's not really, important to her anymore, because that's not what she did it for.
All right. So I became a dad. Medusa recently became a second time mom.
Third time mom.
Her latest is 10 months ago, right?
10 months ago.
Does perspective change? Like for you as an artist, do you rhyme about different things? Do you care about different things?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think all of it makes sense, like Lauryn Hill's trajectory, and I think like as we evolve as people and grow up. And when you're exposed to an industry that at the end of the day really gives no shits about you as a person because you are a cultural commodity to them.
Yep.
I think once you get exposed to that and you realize like the game for what it is, all of that passion and that drive and those dreams, you kind of end up sitting on the, you know, quote unquote top, right? Realizing like, it's really lonely, and also it's not what I thought it was going to be. The air quality, like, sucks up here, you know, and, like, nobody really cares. And after having a child, like, you experience humanity on a different level, and I think you become very much in touch with, like, the larger source, whatever that might be to you, regardless of, like, spiritual practice or background. I think that you really, it's a spiritual moment where you realize the things that you thought were important, like fame, like money, like likes, like, you know what I mean? Like, all these things just don't matter. Like, this little person puts everything in, like, humbling perspective for you. So my music now, I was at an interview yesterday at the Franchise Report, and they were kind of like, I think a little bit taken back in, like, a really cool way, because my whole verse was really about, like, veganism and, like, talking about what it means to, like, be an aspiring vegan and, you know, like, how I'm trying to evolve as more than just an MC. But
you
just,
rapped, you went there and rapped about veganism?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, and because I'm just at a different place in my life, whereas the things I was rapping about before were never really crazy, but it was more like battle rap, trying to prove I'm the best. And now it's more like, yo, I don't want to be the best. I want my community to be well, really, you know, so.
It's sad that the other half of that is the flammable part, right? The flammable part is when you're hungry, when you want to battle everybody and you got a chip on your shoulder and you got something to prove. Mm-hmm. And once you prove it, sometimes people feel like then that's when people start to evolve in a way that we can relate less to. Like, I think you had mentioned Eminem earlier, and I think Eminem's kind of an example of that, right? Like, when he was coming up, his stuff was a different kind of fire as it is now. I find that super interesting. Who else
has... He doesn't have to, though.
What do you mean?
He doesn't have to, like, put as much... Like, this comes to a point in every person's career.
Yep.
This is a point-blank period. Music, sports, anything. We were talking about Stephen Curry. When he was in his prime, he was making money. Endorsements, commercials, everything. Now he's playing, and it's okay. Like, he's not putting in as much hard work as he did before. Because he doesn't have to. You feel me?
Yeah.
He made that money. Money makes the world go around. You feel me? And basketball is his passion. That's what he loves doing. But now he doesn't have to grind as hard because now he made a name for himself. He set records. He did what he had to do. Eminem made a name for himself. He set records. He did what he had to do.
Yeah.
Now he's just sitting back and collecting money. He's sleeping and making money. Like, I want to sleep and make money. That's when I feel comfortable to sleep at night. That's when I'm sleeping and making money.
Medusa, where's the line? Where's the line, right? Because we're talking about being you, telling your truth. When we evolve as people and we're parents and vegans, and those are the things that we're passionate about now, where's the line of us as fans and following you into your passions versus when you were coming up and that's the fire that we want from you? So where's the line that we kind of fall off and maybe stop following you, stop supporting, you know what I mean? And obviously if we love the artists, like, we should continue to support them, but sometimes they're not speaking to us anymore.
Yeah, so. And I think that's fair. You know, I definitely feel, though, as Manami said earlier, if we are still wanting to be viewed as an entertainer and as somebody who wants their music to be, you know, bought, right? I think there's, like, this balance, right? Like, you can be in your feelings, you can be evolving, but how are you still connecting to your audience? If you want to kind of be in your own comfortability, your own house, making music for you, and you want to make that life choice, then that's fine. But if you also are, like, kind of, if you become the grumpy old person that's like, why ain't no one buying my music? No one's coming to my shows. It's like, well, how hard are you working to truly connect and relate to these people?
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, going back to my top five, that's why Jay-Z is my favorite, because I think that he has been able to evolve with the times. And I think, you know, 444 is kind of like his, like, grown man album, although I would argue he's always dropped jewels. And I mean, he's definitely dropped jewels in all of his albums. But he did it in a way with a certain urgency and a youthfulness swagger, whereas 444, I think, is appealing to a different demographic. And he's almost, I think the genius thing about him, and I think as artists what we have to do is I don't think you can just go based on what the market, the current market. I think the best entrepreneurs like create the market. And I think that what he has done is created like an older clientele of hip-hop lovers who got re-inspired to be listening to the music.
So he walks the line, though. He walks the line, and he will, and he will be that hip-hop head, that that true blue, what like old school people are feeling. And that's what you're saying, like he's capturing that audience. And at the same time, then he'll cross the line and go to something that I could relate less to. And it's weird for me because as a fan, I'm listening for Jay-Z and I'm looking for consistency. Mm-hmm. But I'm not getting it. I'm not getting it at all times. Like, he's got some tracks that he just goes off. But then he's got a track where I'm like, this dude's sitting at a piano and he's like, boom, boom, jigga. Boom, boom. And who am I rolling with? And I'm like, come on, man, you better than that. You better than that, homie. But it sounds nice, right? So, like, there's a lot, I don't know.
I think it's really important, though. Like, I think I talk a lot in my practice as a youth educator about, like, slipping in the veggies. It's like, if you have a baby, if you have a baby, right, you're not just going to hand them a tomato and then, like, to eat it. Because if you do, they're going to throw it at you, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much. But if you want that kid to eat, you know, tomatoes, if you're smart, you chop it up and put it in spaghetti sauce and you put it on pizza. And I think Jay-Z is really clever in that way, that he knows how to capture a wide demographic because he knows that Jigga was my mother's name. Like, to me, when I was 12, 13 hearing that, I was like, word, versus if I heard 444, I would have been like, oh, he's real old, honestly. So I think that he, the best artist, in my opinion, like, they know how to appeal to different demographics and take them with them.
I feel you. Who else has a question? We've got some guests here. I know you guys prepared some questions.
I will say, how have you both of you started the career that you were right now?
I could answer for Monami. She was born with it. this is just her soul. If you know her, I'm going to step back now.
Step down for the queen and the other queen.
Welcome back to Alvarez.
Hi, Alvarez. Oh, the last time I was here was Culture Night.
We missed you more than
the last time before
you're the one with
that.
The curly hair that sings really pretty.
Oh, I might have had my dreads out. It might have looked curly. Yeah.
You sing amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It warmed my soul. Okay. So this is where we talk about getting real. You said, how did I start?
Yep.
The way I've seen it in my life is God took away something very important to me, and he gave me something in replace. God took away both my parents, not in the aspect of death, in the aspect of they got lost to the system. They got lost to the drugs, they got lost to the alcohol, A, B, and C, you feel me? So I had a little sister I had to take care of. And when you're taking care of somebody else younger than you, you have no time to grieve. There's no time to think about, oh, dang, I'm going through this A, B, and C. No, it's action, action, action. Where's the next meal coming from? Where's the next house? Where's the next person you're going to beg for food? Like, that's what goes on, you feel me? There's no time to grieve. There's no time to think about any of that stuff. So when I got the time to be by myself, I wrote poetry. And that's what I started with. I started with poetry. I didn't start off singing. I didn't start off rapping. Didn't even know I could sing until I was walking down the hallway in elementary school and somebody said, where's the radio? And I looked back and they're like, oh, it was you. And then I started talking. They're like, oh, you're a girl. And I was like, oh, that's fine. So I wrote more poetry. And what fueled the spark of the creativeness is when I showed my poem to a teacher. I believe I was in like second, third grade, if I'm not mistaken. I showed it to her and she said, what book did you get this out of? And I said, I didn't copy that out of a book. I wrote that myself. She said, no, you didn't. There's no way possible you wrote this. I said, are you kidding me? So I went home that night. I wrote 10 more poems and then I gave it to her the next day. Like, there you go. You said I couldn't do it. Now I did it. And then after that, the music started.
She tried to play me.
Like, don't try to play me, man. Even as a little kid, I was like, not happening.
Yeah, she secretly got you to do mad work, too.
Yeah, like, they kind of how Bert started when he started doing his drawings. The teacher told him he couldn't do it. He's like, what?
Right.
All right, let's see this happen. But that's how I started. I started off with poetry, then I started listening to music, and then I started singing, and then fifth grade came in, and that whole iconic song everybody learns when they're in elementary school, We Are the World. I had to learn that in music. So then we sang that, and they're like, you need to sing. You need to start off singing first. Nobody else is going to start. I'm like, okay, you're asking too much pressure. I didn't ask for all of this. Like, I'm okay. And from there, I just, like, started to write songs. And I like had composition notebooks after composition notebooks after composition notebooks of music after losing tons and tons of music. Every artist loses their music, and that's the most worst part of being an artist. You lose gems, and I lost so many of them. But then I started writing music, and then after the poetry came, and in the midst of me doing music, I started listening to Eminem, and I'm like, lose yourself, huh? We're gonna lose yourself.
Steambox was built on lose yourself. Honestly, it was.
We're gonna lose yourself, huh? So Eminem had a very, very big, even from Renegade, you know, I could spit that whole verse for you right now. I like love Eminem. No, I'm not going to. No, I'm not going to, but I can. And then my love for music started to like fuel, and like I felt as if I was that rose that grew from the concrete, and also like being here, Brother Ray taught me that if you have a gift, you know, it'd be rude and selfish of you to keep it to yourself, and so that's what I do. You know, I've been to schools, I've been to freaking like drug ridden towns with ASU20 like performing. Like we went to a show one time. And not even like a mile or 2 miles away, somebody had overdosed. And we're performing in a library with kids and adults and everything. And all we hear about is somebody just overdosing after we just performed. And we're like, oh my gosh, like anything can happen like that. So like music and everything just like fueled everything that I do in life. And it got to the point where like it really like, and if like I love doing music more than I love being in school. Like I would go downstairs to the music room instead of go to class. She'd be like, "All right, it's time for you to leave. Got to go to class now, Char." And it's like, "All right, yeah, I gotta leave." But music was my passion. Like I've always loved music. Music is what I could put myself into. But what I can say is, with me, I needed to learn how to prioritize music in life. I needed to learn how to separate it, because once it became too much, music became too much, and I had to like shut down and like separate myself from music and reevaluate and get my life together. But you know, every musician has that point in time in their life, but it started off from this little seed in the concrete, just right in the crack in the soil, and then it grew.
You look like you're doing all right right now.
I am. I'm actually doing
the last time I saw you, I just wanted to hug you and steal you and take you home and
adopt. I'm doing
you.
Pretty good. I was I went through a little rough patch. I was homeless for 9 months. I dropped out of school. I dropped out of Alvarez. Then I started the Gateway to College program at Roger Williams University. Now I have two jobs. I work at ASU20, and I also work at Stop and Shop. And I just recently got my own little apartment. So,
whoop.
Little setup. So
that's dope.
Yeah, you know, everything flips over.
You took the hard way.
I took the hard way.
Mm-hmm. It makes you stronger, I bet.
Yeah, you learn everything you learn.
What
by
doesn't
yourself.
Kill you makes you stronger. What is that artist from?
Sometimes.
No, there's a song.
No. I'm sure.
Oh, Kelly Clarkson.
If you start naming Pokemon again,
All right. So let's keep that.
I want to turn it over to Medusa. But first, what was that exact moment that you fell in love with hip hop specifically? It's a brown sugar question.
It very well is. I've always loved music, like no matter what the genre was. I loved rock, I loved country, I loved dance hall, I loved dubstep, I loved every genre of music, because as a kid I was always able to like decipher instruments. Like I could listen to a song and be like, okay, this is what that instrument is, and layer it and know this is how this person put this one piece together. You feel me?
Yeah.
So being able to feel it, and then the influence it had on the community. In Rhode Island, it tends to catch on to trends pretty late, because while New York was on the hip hop, we weren't really on the hip hop like that. After like it passed on a little bit, and then I noticed that Rhode Island got to hip hop.
Yeah.
And I saw I don't know if you've seen the documentary Almost Dope that was put out.
Is that local?
Yeah, it's very local. Rhode Island hip hop. It was the beginning of Rhode Island hip hop, and
I
seen that, and I got to learn a little bit more about Rhode Island hip hop, and got to like really be like, wow, like this is awesome.
What's it called again?
Almost Dope.
Almost Dope. We need to check that out.
Yeah. Brown University students.
It's not you, though.
Matthew, when did you fall in love with hip-hop?
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Well, not
very
not,
specifically,
not,
what was it?
Not necessarily years 2 years ago, but I remember I always used to listen to hip-hop in my mom's car. Like, she would always play it on the way back home from my dad's. So that's what basically sparked it.
Was there a favorite? There wasn't one jam for you?
I mean, the thing that I really hated the most was the R&B that she played in the car.
You were like, no R&B, get back to spitting. Common, I used to love her. That was like the whole song was a metaphor. That was, but Medusa, my homie.
I have a question for her.
Hold up. I want to finish the last one. I want to finish Oscar's question, and then I definitely want to hear your question.
Yeah. And was the question, when did I first fall in love with hip-hop, or how did I get into
music? How did you start to get into music?
Okay. Music has been in me, like all of us, right? I feel like since the beginning. My mom tells the story of me standing in front of the TV and watching like MTV and watching Paula Abdul, and I would just like shake like this and pretend like I was singing. And then from there, like I just at a very young age knew what I wanted to do. Like I wanted to work with animals, people, and make music. And the animals thing has since passed. But yeah, so like I just started writing songs like as early as I can remember, like 6, 7 years old. And got to a point where I was writing. I started off writing R&B songs, though, like more like R&B pop. I wasn't even thinking about rap, really, until I started hearing. I heard Gangsta's Paradise by Coolio. And that remains to be, like, one of my favorite songs of all time. But even then, so, like, I would try to do my hair like Coolio. I would rock all the little braids. Yeah. And that's when we had cassette tapes, and I would, like, DJ my
own. I'm sure I do.
Because I'd have sunglasses on and a black coat with my hair like Coolio. And me and my sister would like DJ our own radio station. And I'd just rap over Coolio over and over again. And even then, I feel like I was kind of dating hip hop. Like I wasn't in love yet, but I was dating it, right? Yep. It wasn't until I went to AS220 Youth.
You're using my "I used to love her" metaphor as you do this. I just think that's beautiful. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And yeah, I was definitely dating hip hop at that point. And so like I grew up without my dad, but I knew that my dad was a rapper because he lived in Cali. And when he felt like talking to us, he would, he sent us like this music video of him rapping and sent us like a CD. And that kind of felt like a connection to him in a weird way because I didn't know him, but I got his music video in the mail and I got his album in the mail. And he was pretty big in LA. I was like, well, my dad's doing it, so let me do it. I used to read some of his old lyrics. And then when I went to AS220 Youth, which was on Broad Street back in the day, called Broad Street Studio, the moment that I went a step further than, like, dating hip-hop to being almost, like, I was like, wait, I think I really want to really date hip-hop right now was when
you're
I walked in. Yeah, I got married. I'll tell you when I got married. But when we kind of, like, made it even, like a tighter connection, I went in and seen all of the elements combined. That was the thing. I knew hip-hop to be music when I was, like, 9, right? When I went to this place and saw B-boys, B-girls spinning on their head, I saw graffiti writers, I saw ciphers, I saw, it was like Captain Planet combined, like, all the rings put together, and I was like, oh, my God, like, what is this? And I feel like New York State of Mind was playing. And even though this is way after New York State of Mind came out, but this was early 2000s, but for me as a young person, it was the first time I was hearing
it. This is all making me feel old.
Right, you know what I'm saying? But it was when I married hip-hop, when I feel like I gave my life to hip-hop, was when we took a trip as Broad Street Studio AS20 to the South Bronx. We went to the South Bronx and we went to go see the Rocksteady Crew. We also got a Bronx tour where they showed us where like Big Pun would freestyle. They showed us the murals. They showed us like the Tats Crew. And I remember standing up on like a rooftop looking over the Bronx and I was like, yo, I give my all to you. Like hip hop, I give my all to you. And I've been done ever since.
Wow.
That's an exclusive origin story. That's not like, I can't relate to that. That's just dope.
A fucking Netflix movie.
Yeah, seriously. That is a Netflix movie. Yep. Hopefully one that gets renewed more than, anyway. They made an old school hip hop. You had another question.
All right, this goes for both of you. Do you feel that you're...
I need you to be louder because you're sitting back a little bit.
Do you feel that if you start at a younger age, you're more successful?
You want me to go first?
Yeah.
Can you define success for me?
Like you'll come out more, or you'll be better at what you're doing. Like you guys started young, so you're...
Can you define success for us?
That's the trick question, I think. I think success to me at one time meant getting signed, meant money, meant having all of my financial burdens taken care of. And being famous. That was what success meant to me.
Rich and famous.
Right. Success to me, again, now 3 kids in, and really understanding what it is we're up against as a people, racism, white supremacy, right? And really understanding the needs of our community. Success to me is not one person rising, but all of us, right? It's about using what matters to you the most, in my case, like my love for young people and music, and using that to help uplift, help others uplift themselves, and being in a financially and mentally and physically sustainable state to where I can do that. So that's really like not a really easy way of summing up success, but I think for me it means being healthy and well and financially stable, so that way we can help each other become that way, so we can all thrive, and it doesn't necessarily mean wealth. So, but to your question, and the reason why I ask that is because people have different definitions of success. Mm-hmm. I do really feel like at a young age, we know what our purpose is. And then we go to school and it gets beat the hell out of us in a lot of cases, unless you come to an awesome program like Steambox, right? Or find another alternative route. But I think that if young people's passions and talents could be cultivated and nurtured when they know them, and that's often when they're like 1 or 2 years old, and they can continue to get that nurture, that people would end up being more fulfilled and thus successful, versus starting when you're older after you go to college and you realize, wow, I want to stick with what I always knew I wanted to do from the beginning.
Can I just stick you in a box and take you back to St. Louis with me?
No.
Yes.
Success to me...
We need it so bad.
Success to me is about not one person rising, but all of us. That's a quote I'm gonna take with us. I think that's pretty dope. That's one of the best quotes on our podcast so far. Who else got a question?
Can I just ask, why Medusa?
Ooh, that's a good question. Good question. Good question. It's like one of those just to bring it back to like that epic origin story. I feel like I didn't choose the name, it chose me. Like, that's really how I feel. No, honestly, my and Manami remembers probably, my original rap name was Angelly Nice. Like Aunt Jelly Nice, because Jelly is like my, okay. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Like, because my nickname is Jelly, so it was kind of like Angelly Nice, Angelly Nice, and it was very old school, and it represented a time where my music was a little bit more boom bap. I got love for the boom bap, but that's not where I'm at, to be completely honest. There was a point where I started evolving as an MC, and honestly, I wanted to, you know, I kind of came up in an era where I was one of the youngest people in the room doing it. You know what I mean? I was, like, trying to battle dudes, like, 10 years past my age. And I felt like they always kind of boxed me into, like, oh, she's so cute. And I was kind of like, no, I'm not cute. I'm serious. I'm like, I'm serious. So I wanted something that was going to tell people I'm serious, I'm venomous, and I'm a boss. Like, don't mess with me. Don't try to box me in. And then out of nowhere, I started reading on, the myth of Medusa. And I started realizing, like, man, this is, like, this woman who's, like, on this island, like Rhode Island. Do you know what I mean? Surrounded by men who are calling her a monster. Do you know what I mean? And really, it's because she was misunderstood. Yeah. Really, it's because she had powers. She had more powers that surpassed theirs. In one glance, she could turn them to stone. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at my hair, it's big, like snakes. Do you know what I mean? So I kind of look at it like I'm a, you know, villain of some, hero to most. And really, if you want, you know, if you walk onto my island, which is like my stage, like I will turn you to stone. And my lyrics are venomous, so.
And a monster among men.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that because it seems like a male-dominated industry, and it seems like if you're a female coming up in the industry, like you're gonna rap a certain way, definitely. Right? Like, and there's very few people who've even broken that mold, right? Like Lauren was one of the first.
Definitely.
Did it take courage to not be everybody else?
It definitely did, because when and maybe I don't know if we share a similar past, but when I first started, very young rapping, I kind of was emulating like a Lil' Kim. I remember like one of my, and I love Lil' Kim. Like I have nothing, there's nothing wrong with a woman owning her sexuality.
Yeah.
But when it's for the male gaze, that's where it becomes problematic, right? So I started rapping like Lil' Kim just because I didn't have anyone else to look up to. This is before I even knew who Lauryn Hill really was, you know? But as I evolved, very quickly, I made a decision for myself that I didn't want to be viewed as a sex object, to be completely honest. And that I just had a vision for how I want to see the world, and I want to use my music to do that. And I remember this one defining moment where, you know, a male rapper who's mad cool, like, I love him to death, but he tried to convince me to write a song that was hypersexual. And he really meant well. He really thought it was a good song. The song was terrible. It was terrible. And I had a moment with him where I had to look him in the eye, and I said, I understand what you're trying to do, but I'm not the one for it. Like, there are just some lines I'm not willing to cross. And from that moment on, I've never had an issue with letting people know, like, I will not ever shit on a woman who decides to go that route, but that is just not where I'm trying to go.
Dope. I gotta ask, you got your G.I. Joe name too, and it's not a name that I called you when you was around because you my baby. We're kind of recording right now, in case you did, in case people haven't noticed. So we calling you Manami now.
Manami,
and I was gonna ask you to correct me if I had it wrong.
Yep, I sure did.
And I apologize. I apologize, but again, you my baby, and I'm still learning your evolutions.
Yes.
Where'd this come from?
Okay, so before
Manami,
my name was Manami. My artist name was AG, which stood for Artistic Goddess. Like, I literally made shirts. Like, it was pretty. It was like Guns N' Roses. Like,
yay.
And I came to school with the shirt on, and they told me I had to leave or I had to get a new shirt because it had a gun on it. And I'm like,
really?
There's roses around the gun. Like, what is it going to hop off the shirt and shoot somebody? So, like, I had to change my shirt that I made, that I was proud of. I made the stents, everything I did by myself. And I had to take the shirt off. But before that, my name was Artistic Goddess. And I abbreviated it to AG, and then somebody told me that in New York that means like stud or dyke or something along the lines of that, or aggressive. And I'm like, I'm not aggressive. I'm aggressive, but I'm not aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
You feel me? So I don't know. And then it got to the point where I got older and I was just tired of getting called AG. And it was like, all right, I'm getting older. I'm getting more mature. You need something that fits you.
Okay.
So I was looking up names. And, like, nothing fit. So I was like, I'm tired of names. Let me try conceptualism. And I was like, I was watching a podcast that my friend had did. And she had just recently started booking me for shows. And she said...
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Started booking me for shows. And she said... oh, yeah, and I started booking this new artist, Body Bag Manami. She spits like a Uzi. She's out of this world. And I was like, out of this world. I was like, and I always felt as if, like, I was really good at what I did. And, Earth wasn't the place for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, Manami, the way you spell it is man, am I. Conceptual. Am I man? Man, am I. You feel me?
Yeah.
So, that's where, and how I got the pronunciation, because I didn't want it to be like Manami, so I wanted it to be Manami. And it still fit because the spelling fits the same.
Yeah.
But the name came from me, the conceptualism of man, am I. Like, am I really human? Because what I do, I know I'm really good at, and nobody can do it the way I can. You feel me? So that's where the name came from.
That's dope. That's dope.
Mm-hmm. I never knew that. That is so dope.
I'm so happy to see you in the place that you're in.
Thank you.
I'm so happy to see you return. We got more questions?
When she said she was human, I was just thinking in my head, I'm only human.
Say again?
When she said that she feels like she's human, but not, like, she feels different, I was thinking in my head, like, I'm only human, that's all.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a question?
Me?
Do you have a question?
When did you, like, realize that this is what I really want to do, not for the music, not for the, not for the profit, not for no record label, so, like, somebody could own my music. No, just for me. Like, this is something that I love.
She talked about marrying it, right? But, like, the commitment, like, this is, I'm going to do this. Yeah.
I just feel like I always knew it. Like, I feel like I was committed once I popped out my mom, like, to be completely honest. Like,
hey, mom,
like you couldn't knock me off my square. Like, I've been, that's the one thing. If I know one thing in life, I knew I was going to have something serious to do with music. And I didn't know how. And I still don't really know how. I'm still kind of feeling my way around. But I just know that me and music are synonymous. Like, there can't be me without it. And I by the time I was, like, under 10 years old, I had contracts where if people wanted to get in my basement and jump in my dance group, they had to sign a contract that they were going to be on time, that they were going to practice hard, and they were going to commit to all of our upcoming shows, which we didn't really have many. But, you know, like, I just felt like, yeah, from day one, I wanted to be, like, the Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, like, you know, have my own label, have my own thing. And, like, that's why to be able to work at AS220 Youth and help cultivate talent and develop talent is, like, my dream job, to be honest.
And you get to rise together.
Exactly.
Cool. We shall rise.
I wanted to ask, I've got a question. I watched MCs on TV, on the YouTube channel, going on the radio stations, and I saw something weird one time, and it was very different, and this might be a generational thing, and forgive me if it is, But I saw one of my favorites, Black Thought, from The Roots, and he was sitting right next to Method Man. And Method Man's from, you know, the Wu-Tang Clan. And Method Man's slightly even more famous, you know, as an MC, which is interesting. And they were asked to freestyle, right? So I want to get into definition of freestyle, because what I saw from them was two very different things. I saw Black Thought just grab the microphone and go off. This dude went off, and a week later, he was on somebody else's show and went for 10 minutes, not picking up a lyric. You know when people are freestyling, they're like, yeah, and they're searching for new rhymes? And I'm not mad at them for that, because I can't do this, right? Black Thought didn't do that at all. I watched him on the video. He did this for half a second, not even enough time to skip a beat. Like, his rhymes flowed for 10 minutes off the top of his head. I'm sure he'd written some stuff somewhere, but it was sick. But when he was sitting next to Method Man then went, oh, yeah, pulled out his phone, and he read some lyrics. And I'm like, yo, is that freestyling? And then somebody else who knows hip-hop very well was like, yeah, it's freestyling. I'm like,
I'm just going to press the brakes on that right there.
Help me out. What's freestyling? All
right, so let me tell you this right now. When I first started to do music, like when I first started to be like, oh, yeah, I think I want to be a rapper, I started freestyling. I couldn't freestyle if my life depended on it.
Yep.
Like, I was, like, one of those, like, good, like, you know, never said the N-word, never, like, swore. Like, I would say, always say, oh, yeah, but these people getting on my nerves. Like, I was, like, a very, like, because I was, like, if my parents hear this or if my guardian hears this, like, how would they feel? You feel me? But I was always, like, a censored rapper. Can you say the question again?
When
freestyle.
Okay, so I was always, I got you. So I was always like a censored rapper. But as time went on, I started to freestyle more and more. What I do know is when you freestyle, freestyling is something that comes off like, this is what I'm doing, I can freestyle. Hold it, let me stop, let me give it to you for a while. Yeah, I can do it, drop it right now. Yeah, I won't stop. If you really want to get it, yeah, I'll be on the clock, but you got to pay me. See, you got to hear it now. That's freestyle.
Wow.
You like, whoa. That's freestyle. Me doing this and be like, oh, yeah, bars. No, that's not freestyle. You wrote that. You feel me? It could be like a freestyle. It'd be a freestyle verse. Like, say if somebody played a beat and like you wrote to it and you had no objective. You're just writing bars. And then you throw that up on and be like, hey, that, and I throw it out on the internet and be like, hey, this is a little freestyle. That's a freestyle. But that's like a planned freestyle. That's not like a.
On the spot.
Yeah, like you wrote it. A freestyle is something that you do freely. You know, it just comes naturally. And not everybody is good at it.
So between you and I, and I'm on your team, seems like there's 50 Shades of Grey when it comes to freestyle. But when it comes to pulling out lyrics and reading from them, that doesn't qualify according to our definition.
That is like, how do you say, disrespectful to hip-hop?
Yeah.
Like,
how if you're one of the godfathers of hip-hop, right? And Method Man is not really, but it's 93. But I'm saying if you Method Man and you the classic, you the OG of hip-hop.
You should feel out of place and uncomfortable that you even did that yourself.
Didn't Cannabis do that during the battle?
Who?
Cannabis or something like that.
With LL?
I don't even remember. No, there was something like 2 years ago. I remember when people were roasting him. I believe it was Cannabis.
Pull out your phone.
Where he pulled out his lyrics during a battle.
You don't pull out your, like, this is, and we had, I have had this conversation before because I'm a battle rapper.
Yep.
And I had gotten booked for a battle in Brooklyn.
Yep.
Ooh. And I, like, too much was going on in Rhode Island for me right there. Like, I was going through a lot of transitions. I didn't really have enough time to write. I didn't have enough time to, like, read and remember everything. But I was like, hey, yo, I signed up for this battle. I'm not going to say I'm not going to go. I'm not going to give him that, you know. I'm going to go do what I can do, even if it's me taking this L right now, because taking L's leads to success. You don't, without failure, you don't succeed.
Yeah.
So that's how I seen it, and I took that L. And I freestyled some of my... And I freestyled some of my thing. And we talked about it. Like, even being an artist, memorizing your lyrics is the most important thing to do.
Yep.
How are you going to perform, rock a stage, connect with the crowd, and you're reading off your phone, and you're reading on a piece of paper? How are you going to do that? That's not possible. You feel me? So And how do you feel comfortable doing it, not knowing what the next line is and, like, having to read off of it? You don't feel comfortable as an artist. That's what you practice for. And Method Man, I just, you know, I love you, but right there, my friend, I'm going to have to disagree with you on that.
Whack.
Method you Man. Got roasted.
That is disrespectful to hip hop.
I'm rocking a Wu Tang style shirt and it's Method Man whack.
Yeah. Roasted. You know,
Black Thought Fighters.
At one point in time, I was Wu Tang affiliated, so like.
Yeah, I don't think that you can qualify that as a freestyle. I am not somebody who freestyles well at all, so I would never do it in public.
Yeah.
I only freestyle in the shower, to be honest. Like, I just wouldn't even, like, I'm so embarrassed about it, I wouldn't even let my kids hear me try to freestyle. Mm-hmm. I can freestyle melodies, like, when I'm singing and stuff, but, like, words, I'm too much, honestly, I'm such a perfectionist that that's just not my strong suit, so I respect people who can. But I do think, like, the word freestyle has been used synonymously with being able to recite bars off the top of your head that you previously remembered. So, like, for example, like, when I went to the show last night, when they have, like, this freestyle section, people come really prepared with lyrics they already have, and I'm one of them because I can't freestyle, you know? But I think it's, like, a known thing that that's what everyone does.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But not for one second if someone's, like, you have to be real about it, you know? It's, like, if somebody says... was that a freestyle? You got to say no. Like, that was something that was pre-written, you know. But you have to at least like be real about it. And I think that's where it gets misconstrued if somebody's like, "Nah, that was a freestyle," and it's like, "No, it clearly wasn't." You know.
But a lot of people, when they get booked for like podcasts and stuff, they are intentionally told to write a 16 or a 64 before and ahead of time, so you are not looking stupid on their cameras.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
So with that being said, that's different.
Sense.
But he should have memorized his words.
Definitely.
He shouldn't have took his phone out. That's disrespectful. Like, you don't do that. Like, he shouldn't have did that. That's a no-no. In the hip-hop and music game, that's a no-no.
And when Black Thought was on Funkmaster Flex, like, Flex was talking about how everybody else be pulling stuff out and just reading it on the air. Like, it's apparently it's common. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's just something that I found interesting and I definitely wanted to ask you about. Kind of on a similar subject, right? On a similar subject, we talked about how even as OGs, so to speak, we still got love for, like, this generation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we're definitely not trying to shit on this generation.
But
if somebody's mumbling, I kind of... talk to me about mumble rap.
I mean, so I'm a fan. I'm a total fan. Like Migos are, like, definitely who I'm listening to. I was so amped that Culture 2 came out. And I still haven't gotten through it. But I really, like, whether it be 21, whether it be Kodak, whether it be Migos, or whoever we're looking at, I mean, I just think there's, like, some genius in what they're doing, and it's not the same genius as, like, from when we were younger.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's not necessarily, the culture nowadays is not really about lyrics, it's about feeling. Do you know what I mean? And it's about, like, lived experience and making music that people can, like, their soul connects to, and it's not dependent necessarily on words. You know, sometimes it really is just the Migos, similar to a 2018 version of Bone Thugs and Harmony, being able to harmonize together, like, three men who are all related being that in sync that they can harmonize in that way, I think is beautiful. Again, I think the icky thing about it is that is like how much of like the corporation's hands are in that, right?
Yeah.
If it's authentically coming from their minds and their hearts, that's beautiful. But I think the part that is more icky than it used to be, I would say, probably when hip hop was first starting, is that there's money behind people pushing products in their songs, right? Or pushing drugs, right? Or even whatever.
I never looked at, I mean, so you get into capitalism, but I never looked at it like that. And having researched the brain for different things that I'm doing, logic and feeling are like two completely different parts of the brain that almost oppose each other to some degree.
Absolutely.
So for a Black Thought, and I'm talking about a lyricist, you know, somebody might feed me if that logic part of my brain is what lights up more.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if somebody's appealing to feeling, because my friend from St. Louis has mentioned Bone Thugs and Harmony before, and I've got no love, and I've never had any love for Bone Thugs and Harmony. But the way that you just, I know we've had,
so
but
many.
The way that you just framed it makes a lot of sense to me, because my brain is going to register one and not necessarily the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that super interesting. I wanted to wind down. We got like three more questions.
TLC.
What's 10 to 11 Care or
no,
T-Boz Left Eye and Chili?
No.
That's T-Boz Left Eye and Chili.
No.
Are we not talking about T-Boz Left Eye and Chili?
No.
Am I an old man and have no idea what we're talking about?
Tomatoes.
I don't know what TLC is, bro.
Are we not talking
10
about
10 to 11 Care?
Tomatoes, lettuce, and cheese.
T-Boz Left Eye and Chili.
T-Boz.
Did they sing Waterfalls?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's T-Boz Left Eye and Chili. That's their names. That's
TLC.
Why it's,
that's why it's called TLC. Y'all need to get it
that's
together.
Great.
Don't be trying
it's
to
my
see
Pokemon
what we're trying to play.
My
it's
Pokemon
like, you know what we're talking about.
It's no. going Shoot. Off. What's your question about TLC?
So, like, if any music that you have brought in have is, like, one of the songs of TLC have, like, inspired you?
Have you been inspired by TLC or somebody like TLC before?
No, like one of the songs. So they have
I thought I was helping, but I'm sorry.
Like okay. any song that have you wrote, is it like inspired by one of their music?
Has TLC touched you? Exactly. Not like Show Me on the Doll where TLC touched you, but like...
You are fired.
She knows, Steambox students are my boss. I brought in somebody old school who can fire me.
Fired.
I don't know if you still qualified. I don't know. You haven't spent enough hours.
Wait, let me get to her question first.
Oh, sorry. you asked the, all right,
so,
asked the tough one.
Yeah. No, they haven't influenced any of my music that I am aware of. But I can say that there has been so much music created, so much music that has influenced my life and other people's lives, that when you kind of make a song, there's already going to be a song that's kind of like the song you made. You feel me?
Yeah,
and it's
true.
2018, and it's gone to the point where it's now, like, it's inevitable. You done used all the words in the dictionary. There's no more, like, there's nothing else you can do now. But you can make it your own. So, no, specifically, they haven't, like, I haven't, like, listened to, like, Pretty and been like, oh, yeah, let me go write a song because I listen to Pretty. Mm-hmm. Or I haven't listened to Waterfalls. I'm like, oh, yeah, let me write this song. And, like, yeah, no. So, not necessarily.
All right,
that I'm aware of.
So unless you have more to add for TLC, I want to ask you, do you have guilty pleasure music? It doesn't have to be hip-hop. Do you have something in music that you don't want people to know you listen to?
Why would you ask?
No.
I want you to hear people first.
I'm asking them to publicize something. I'm pulling them outside of their comfort zone.
What's your
For me, it's the Grease soundtrack, right?
I
like
Grease.
I'm saying it's
Grease.
Grease. I don't. There's my friends make fun of me when they're in the car and like Grease Lightning comes on. It's an old musical. Because
I like Grease.
I'm glad you like Grease. I'm not
like
talking
it.
About Manteca. I'm talking about.
No, I know the movie. I know the musical. Relax.
I can.
What's your guilty pleasure?
So, I mean, like, this is the thing. Before I. I guess it's not guilty anymore because I just own it. You know what I'm saying? I just own it. But like, I was definitely a hardcore Spice Girls fan and NSYNC.
What?
Like,
Yes, girl. I mean,
my.
What?
My
You can't give her props on it.
I'm gonna give her props on it.
I still go back and listen to it. Like, my room was lined with pictures of Justin Timberlake and like the Spice Girls. And
what is chicken noodle?
He's just an American treasure, though. I mean,
me and my sister when NSYNC came out with their Disney tour. It was like their first like concert on Disney Channel. We argued about who was gonna die with the tape in our casket. Like,
what?
We literally got into a fight crying about who was gonna have the VHS.
That's
tape
a real thing.
In their casket.
Yeah. That's real life.
Yes.
Wow.
Like, so that's embarrassing. That's really embarrassing. But I still listen to tearing up my heart all the time. So. Brittle's like, I lost all respect for you.
Never, never. You hit me up with this quote today that just
changes life.
Won my heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have a guilty pleasure music. Like, personally, like, I kind of like chill with all my friends. I can basically say all the people I hang around with are like music heads, and they're very. Some of them are not open minded to other genres of music, but the majority of them are. So I can play whatever I feel like playing, but I'm a very, very, very large fan of dubstep and dancehall.
Okay.
Like, love it.
Yeah.
Like, the feeling of the bass. But then you got performing, like, you got performing with a band, and the feeling of the bass, just feeling music in itself is awesome, but feeling every single frequency in a dubstep
Spark.
Song and going to Hyperglow and just being in that mosh pit and just feeling all that sweatiness and liquor getting jumped on you and bass and like
bass.
It's just awesome. I love dubstep though. That's my guilty pleasure. If nobody likes anything else.
I am so forgive me, this is all about you, but while you're in the room, Chelsea, guilty pleasure music. I can only imagine.
Motown?
That's not guilty.
What
pleasure. She is so opposite that, like, our, like, regular pleasure is her guilty pleasure.
I don't know. Oh, that's really hard. Oh, Disney Channel music. Yeah, that's it.
Welcome.
When I'm cleaning, like... Let it go.
That's
my jam.
Oh,
yeah.
Rose.
What?
Cinderella
from Cheetah Girls.
Cheetah Girls had this.
I have lost all control. I wanted, they have a whole bunch of questions. We're running out of time, and I don't want to kill it. I never want one of our podcasts to go over an hour. You wanted to know about...
Biggie or Tupac?
Lightning round.
Tupac.
Yes.
You all get the hell no on that one.
What you mean, bro?
I'm just saying we in the Me Too movement and somebody who was convicted for some sexual assault talking about like how we need to cherish our women and stuff. I don't know. I took exception to some of his stuff. I always thought he was a different person than the person that he marketed to. When we talked about capitalism earlier, and I know you love Tupac, and I know hearing somebody crap on Tupac, I know you're not gonna feel it.
I felt like
there was a corporate package, almost an anti-corporate package, that was still a corporate package that Tupac presented, and I felt like it wasn't really Tupac.
All right, so check this. Tupac was an entertainer. Tupac did ballet. Tupac was an actor. Tupac was an artist. Tupac cared about money.
But he sold it, though.
So again, there's a difference between art and product, and that was almost my thesis.
You can rap
when
a song
I was doing this stuff.
To the motherfucker. Excuse my. You can rap a song and say every word, and a gangster can feel every word, and you ain't did nothing in that song.
Yeah.
So just because you hear it, don't mean it's true.
Just because
he said it, don't mean
I respect
true.
It.
You know,
the answer was Tupac.
I like
your
Tupac,
answer is Tupac,
but I love Biggie. Don't put on Ten Commandments. Every word is getting said, even the skit in the beginning. I don't care.
I love some Biggie.
But I'll take Tupac over Biggie.
I'll take neither. I'll go rock him in old school on you guys.
But even now,
Kendrick and other people, I feel like have lit me up more than those two kind of ever have. But I got a lot of respect for both of them anyway. Go ahead.
Let's talk about Joyner Lucas.
Oh, yes.
Let's talk about Joyner Lucas because he is a beautiful storyteller, and I love his music.
You heard Sorry?
I heard everything he dropped, I heard. Okay?
I don't even know who
everything.
That is. Everything.
Me neither.
How do you say the last name? I don't even know how to say the last name. Mm-hmm. The first story he came out with. All right, so basically, he's from Connecticut. He is an artist that is on like the come up. Like he's on the come up. He's a storyteller though. Mm-hmm. So he has a song called I'm Sorry. He has a song called I Don't Wanna Be Like You. He has a song called Ross Cappuccino, something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to say the last name. But they're all stories. One's about a story in the hood about a boy that trusts somebody that he shouldn't have trusted and end up getting killed. Because he was somebody else's gang initiation. Mm-hmm. And the crazy shit is, I know somebody that died like that because they were somebody's gang initiation. Mm-hmm. And I loved that song.
You showed us that at the studio.
Yeah, at the studio. He's that artist.
Okay, yep.
And he's the one that came up with the song I'm Not Racist that has all this controversy in the mainstream. And personally, I feel as if, and there was a reaction to I'm Not Racist saying that not every black male does what he was portraying in the song. That is absolutely true. But in poverty, when you see and you go through the hood, you see that shit. And you don't see nobody trying to get out. And when you do see somebody trying to get out, it's like the 5% of the hood that really wants to work. But like, and it's because other people get comfortable in the circumstances that they're in. They get comfortable with government assistance. Oh yeah, let me sit in my behind and make this amount of money, and I can still get this food for free, and that'll be fine because I'll be able to make it through the rest of the month because I can do this with the extra amount of money in excess A, B, and C. But that's besides the point. Joyner Lucas is somebody that everybody should listen to because if not all of his songs, one of his songs is going to connect to you some way somehow. There's a song about his cousin committing suicide. There's a song, oh my God, there's just so many of them. Just listen to him, he's awesome.
Like
I Don't Want to Be Like You is the
most. We gotta check some Joyner Lucas. Do you guys have any advice before we wrap up? I hate if you didn't have something to say. This group is going to be on radio soon with this podcast. This podcast is heard around the world. I don't know why. I don't get it. Because we literally talk shit.
We do stupid.
We literally talk shit. I don't get it.
Really.
But do you have advice for those of us who want to get into recording? There are at least 3 people in this room who are looking to get into recording and participate more. What would you say to those young folk?
I mean, I automatically say, come to S20, and we have a free recording studio there.
Free,
but I think like one of the biggest things that I feel like I made a mistake doing as a young person was waiting for things to be perfect to like do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just like, even with recording, like we have devices now where we can record on iPads, on iPhones, or, you know, GarageBand, or, you know, in Providence, luckily, it's like a mecca for youth programs. Do you know what I mean? So I would say, like, utilize your resources. Don't wait for things to be perfect.
Yes.
And
be okay
and then get
dress.
Feedback from people. Like, show people what you're working on, people you can trust who will really give you honest feedback.
Yeah.
And stay motivated. Mm-hmm. Through all the ups and downs in life, trust me, there will be many.
I've seen you up and down.
You've seen me at my darkest.
You've never
close to my darkest.
You've never stopped. By the way, when I met her, it was on a bus trip to the Inspire Con or something like that in Massachusetts, and I introduced myself to her, and she says she gave me her government name, and and then she just started singing, and she was like, "That's my gift. You're welcome." Like, that's what's up. She made me spit bars back at her, and I started rapping next thing you know, and I'm like, what?
He showed me a song that, he showed me a song that he wrote to his ex-girlfriend that he had said on the radio, that he said on the radio, that he did on the radio, it is out there, I don't care,
but
he did it on the radio,
but I'm real,
and made a reference to Pokemon in it.
But I'm real though, no? Did you hate it? All right, so
I liked it.
I appreciate you. Medusa, Manami, do we have any shout outs before we leave? Who do you want to shout out?
Shout out to AHC20. Shout out to Angeli Nice. You already know what it is. Shout out to Behind Bars Entertainment. I am the CEO and I'm the manager. But anyways, shout out to Alki God Entertainment. And life, prosperity, and wealth, my friends.
Yeah, I mean, definitely shout out to the whole AS220 youth community. Shout out to the Intruders football team.
You already know
Intruders
what it is.
Intruders Nation. What's up, West
Eagles,
End?
Just saying.
Yeah, your Eagles.
Playing.
Now we came
face.
From the Eagles.
The face. Did you see that face?
I got mad love for the Eagles.
No, it was like Stitch.
She's a mom.
It was like
a mom. You don't mess with the mom. She's the mom.
I have so much love for
the
Eagles. My kids came from the Eagles, but we are now Intruders diehard supporters, representatives. And shout out to the young people, man. Like, seriously, like, this community
Ooh.
Would not be as valuable, would not be as transformative if it wasn't for you all doing this work. I really feel like Providence has, like, the most innovative, most inspiring, like, group of, like, young minds that I've ever witnessed. And, like, I'm so proud to say I'm from here. So, like, shout out to y'all. Seriously.
Shout out to y'all.
Shout out to Steambox and Roberto.
Shout
man.
Out to Steambox and Roberto.
We would be honored and lucky to have you back one day. Thank you guys for coming. So, this has been another Steambox production. Steambox crew, please say peace out.
Peace out! Why?